to really get at the roots of what happened as of August 9th and the uprisings that happened thereafter, we really have to first and foremost understand St. Louis and how it's situated. Although most folks, when we look at St. Louis, we associate it with being Midwest. The real character and nature of the city and its culture is Southern. We really think of it as being up South, the Mid-South. It's right in the middle of a trail that runs from the South along 55 through Memphis, St. Louis, Chicago, and Detroit. St. Louis was one of those stopovers along the way. And a lot of Southern culture still prevails in very tangible ways in St. Louis. St. Louis has often been called like a lab. It's been a historic lab for segregation throughout its history. It was one of the first places that we saw manifestations of racialized covenants regarding housing and occupancy. And even after those covenants were ruled illegal, they actually still found ways to create restricted housing in ways that further increased segregation in the city in ways that are still very visible and manifest to this day. Beginning of the century, of the 20th century, we would have seen extreme concentration of all the population in the city proper. As more blacks began to come up from the north, you started seeing folks begin to move out, especially with the trail of industrialization. They began to create that first outer ring, which is, we know, the process to be called like white flight. So as industry began to move in an outer ring for those cities, they began to actually create municipalities. Those municipalities, on one hand, allowed them to first and foremost create restrictive covenants for who else could actually live there. But further, it also created separate streams of income for them in terms of taxes, in terms of penalties, in terms of being able to maintain their own courts, their own policing systems. During this period, and especially as we move forward, what happened is that as the civil rights era, as legislation made it easier for black folks to begin to move into these industries that had taken place out there, they also began to move out to those same outer circles. And white flight, as you know, people began to leave in some cases. Ferguson, until very recently, was 90-some-odd percent black. But the character of not just Ferguson, but all the counties adjacent to it and surrounding it still manifested the same normality that existed prior to, which meant that they were hostile toward people of color that would actually be in the area. So driving through those areas, there was always increased police presence. Like, you know, by stop and frisk, for us, these were basically just pedestrian stops. They would stop actual cars for whatever reason they want it. Sometimes there is actually a prerequisite, sometimes not. In many cases, for those of us who actually lived in the area, and I grew up there like 80s, primarily 80s going into the 90s, the regular experience in these communities, even after the population began to shift, was that you could be stopped for any given reason just walking down the street. Like I said, this is no different than what you experience in stop and frisk. So my first interactions with the police was at like 12, 13 years old, walking home from school without provocation, just being stopped, maybe thrown across a police car, searched, in just a constant state of harassment. Now, Ferguson is one of, I think there's like 90 some odd municipalities, and this was predominant behavior. Now, when these cities were first established, they didn't have a sound financial base. Like, there was industry, but they weren't designed to be sustainable. So a large part of the actual income that they became dependent upon was directly based in and around police activities, municipal activities, ordinance violations, fines. So any interactions that you had with the law could actually end up trapping you in a situation that put you in a cycle of debt that I know Jeff's probably going to go into much deeper. Michael Brown's experience was the very same experience that I had and the same experience that his father had growing up. His father actually graduated just a few years after I did. And the challenge of it was that within a matter of miles, not 10 miles, but usually one or two, in some cases a matter of blocks, you're going from one municipality to another municipality to another, that one is already has a culture that can and will harass you, but also has a separate policing system and separate court system that could entrap you in any given way, and really without much discretion. What took place for Michael Brown Jr. could have happened to his father. It could have happened to me, and it has happened. The only difference in this case has been the amount of attention that we were able to give this, in part because they actually abandoned his body there for 4 hours, 4.5 hours, and because of the ongoing, ever-present eye that social media actually provided.